May it please the court, Andrew Hirth from the Attorney General's Office on behalf of all the state appellants. One of the social justice issues that came to light following the events in Ferguson, Missouri in 2014 was a perception that the municipal court systems, in St. Louis County in particular, had a lot of unfair practices or disadvantaged the people that came before the court on a number of grounds. And the state responded to that in a number of ways. This court, for example, set up a committee to review how municipal court procedures work. And the legislature, for its part, passed Senate Bill 5, which did a number of things regarding municipal court law. Principally, two of them that we'll be talking about in this case have to do with requiring new filings or the municipality's attorney new information, or a new form, I should say, as part of their annual financial report to the state auditor, and also some changes in the procedures and processes that the municipal courts use. Now, there is no question that Senate Bill 5, that St. Louis County is, and the municipalities in St. Louis County are treated differently under Senate Bill 5 than the municipalities in the rest of the state. But that itself is not that unusual. There are, just by quick count, a non-exhaustive count, there are about, I think it's 12 other statutes that make that single out individual counties based on the same language here, a county with a charter form of government and more than 950,000 inhabitants. Previously, there, in fact, still on the books are 33 statutes that do the same thing, but it's more than a million. That, of course, is an issue that's coming before this court in another case, but in the 2010 census, St. Louis County fell below a million, but above 950,000. And that really, I think, is key here. That
are you saying that doesn't make it special, or it's substantially justified, or both?
I'm saying that the population, a characteristic in a statute, is open-ended, because.
And of course, you know, there's limitations on that, where we've said where it's too narrow a window, certainly it cannot be. And opposing counsel says that rationale applies here. You say not because it only has a floor. Can you address that further?
Certainly. So the Jefferson County Fire District case set out three factors that this court looks at to consider whether a non-facially special law is in fact special and sort of conceals its specialness in otherwise non-special terms. And those three factors cannot be met in this case. The first is that that the law as written applies to really only one or maybe a very few political subdivisions of the state. Here, the question is, what is the political subdivision we're talking about? The municipalities say, we're talking about St. Louis County. There is only one county in this state that has a charter form of government and more than 950,000 inhabitants. But on the second prong of the test, whether there are other similarly sized political subdivisions that are not included, there the municipalities want to say the political subdivision is the municipality, because there are other municipalities throughout the state that are similar in size to those in St. Louis County, but are not affected the same way by the statute. But that's comparing apples and oranges. The political subdivision in the first prong there is only one because it's St. Louis County. Well, there are no other counties in the state of Missouri that are similar in size to St. Louis County. If we're looking at the municipality as the relevant political subdivision, there are 90 political subdivisions in St. Louis County that this rule applies to. That is not a special law. It applies to 90 different municipalities.
Well, just because there's 90 doesn't mean it isn't a closed class.
That's true, Your Honor, although...
I mean, they could have just said if they just said the 90 counties and 90 municipalities and St. Louis County, this would be a much easier case to decide.
I think perhaps, although certainly the number of affected parties has some bearing on the Jefferson County test. whether we're looking at if it's only one, if it's 90, if it's all. 90 is somewhere between the two. I don't think I would concede that.
You concede that this law was obviously directed at where the legislature thought the problem existed?
I think that's true, although this court has never held that the legislature can't legislate by neighborhood. There are local problems in different parts of the state that require different remedies, different kinds of statutory
But that addresses substantial justification, doesn't it, as opposed to
special? It does, although we never get to substantial justification unless the law is special under the...
But if you're saying they can treat certain neighborhoods differently because they're different, how is that, isn't that going to substantial justification?
Well, if the law isn't facially special, and it does affect 90 municipalities here, and only 90 municipalities,
right.
But that's right now.
Well, can you tell from the circuit court's ruling why it thought this violated the constitutional prohibition of special laws?
I cannot. It's
so
not clear.
So you'd have to overcome both of those arguments in order to succeed.
Yes, we have two different sections of SB 5 that were held unconstitutional that we are appealing. The special law affects the limitation to St. Louis County, but then there's also the Hancock Amendment claims.
But you were going on, you were talking about the Jefferson County factors. I don't think you got a chance to finish why you think this was not, why this is open-ended.
Sure. So the precedent of this court has said that that population characteristics are generally open-ended, and this particular characteristic, this statute has two characteristics, one based on population and one based on form of government, that it be a charter form of government. And, of course, that's up to the people of the county. They can change their form of government if they wish to.
And I believe that under the first prong that you say at some point Jackson County could fall into this definition, but your opponent argues it would probably be the year 2050 or whatever before Jackson County could ever have the population that this restriction requires. What's your response to that?
So under current growth rates, that's true. It would take probably 50 years to get to that number. But that's not the only way a county's population can change. By statute, counties can change their boundaries. They can split in half. They can give part of their county to another county that wants it. So for example, if Jackson County were to merge essentially with Clay County, they would have the requisite number of people.
That may be far less likely than getting to that size of
the life. I agree that it's unlikely.
The river could cut a new channel, too.
Yes. I agree that it's unlikely, but it's not impossible. The point here is that the special law provision was really intended to prevent the kind of law that singles out one community. The way that the DeSoto case does.
Is there a rational basis for treating a population, a county with 950,000 different than one with 550 or 600, whatever Jackson County is?
I believe so, Your Honor.
And here's the reason.
So St. Louis County has 90 municipalities within it. The next five largest counties in the state, Jackson has only 20 municipalities, St. Charles 24, Greene 16, Jefferson County 14, and Clay County 22. All five added together gets to 96. So you've got a county which has lower levels of government, a whole lot of them, which means if you drive from one side of St. Louis County to the other, you're subject to an awful lot of different jurisdictions. There's a very good reason to say, well, we're going to give a little more of a skeptical eye and rein that in a little bit more. When there are that many municipalities within close proximity to another. So I think that's a rational basis for treating them differently.
Okay, what about the third prong of Jefferson County?
Right, so the third prong deals with whether the population range is narrow, so narrow that it's clear only, that it was set only to pick out this particular subdivision. And I think just on its face, more than 950,000 can't be narrow. It's infinite. By definition, this isn't a case where it's more than 6,000 but fewer than 7,000, as it was in the DeSoto case. And also in DeSoto, there are six different factors that were at issue there, not just the population of the county, but the population of the city. Also, the city was entirely surrounded by a single fire protection district, something that the city of DeSoto has no control over.
Now, your opponent argues that the state provided no evidence of substantial justification. Is that true?
We did put no evidence on a trial, but we weren't required to. The burden only shifts to the state if the plaintiff can satisfy the Jefferson County test.
So you felt pretty confident that you satisfied it?
I would say it's a mixture of believing that we'd satisfied it, but also really a lack of legislative history in our state. That it's difficult for us to explain exactly why the legislature might have thought, or did something as opposed to.
Well, you did so just today. You talked about the history of Ferguson and what's going on in the municipalities and so forth. Was that before the legislature?
I think if we were trying to show substantial justification, that we would have to put on evidence of that sort of thing. But we never got there. We only really addressed the three-pronged test that would have shifted the burden to the state. We don't believe that burden was carried.
What is the impact of the Jefferson County presumption in prior cases? Must all three prongs be met for the court to find that it is a special law, or can the court find it based on the circumstances of a particular case, even without the presumption, without the shifting of the burden? And likewise, if there are the three prongs, then it appears that the burden shift, that the court could still find it's not a special law, even if the burden did shift. So sometimes presumptions can't be rebutted, sometimes they can be rebutted. So how the cases treated the three prongs, the evidence supporting the three prongs as to what type of presumption it is?
I see that I'm out of time, but the case law, my review of the case law suggests that this isn't three factors to be balanced. It's basically three elements. You have to show all three. It's not enough just to satisfy one element or maybe two elements, but really all three are part of the test.
So that you're saying you believe that the precedent would be, unless all three are shown, a court cannot find a special law.
I wouldn't want to say a court cannot find a special law, but I would say under that precedent, the guidance that this court has given in past cases, that's the rule that lower courts should follow.
Since this is a case that where there was evidence presented and factual findings made by a trial court, is this one of those presumptions that changes the burden of production or the burden of persuasion?
Well, I think in terms of the, since we did have a trial with evidence, I don't know that the burden of production necessarily comes into it. I mean, certainly the burden of persuasion would be with the plaintiffs until I believe they could shift that burden under the Jefferson County test. And once they did, then the state would have the burden of persuasion to say, well, there's a substantial justification. But up until that point, the burden resides with the plaintiff to say that there is no rational basis for the distinction made in the statute. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, David Patinsky representing 12 municipalities in St. Louis County and two taxpayers. First of all, this is a classic special law under this court's Jefferson County three-part test, which this court reaffirmed in this year's decision in DeSoto. You rejected in DeSoto the state's argument that the Jefferson County test had been modified by an intervening decision. And so DeSoto stands for the proposition that the Jefferson County test applies to determine whether any law is a special law. The fact that maybe other laws out there haven't been challenged is totally irrelevant. The only question before this court is whether this law is a special law. We also have other arguments on other issues, but I want to address that first. Now, what SB 5 did was for only the municipalities in St. Louis County, limit them to 12.5% of their annual general operating revenue in terms of retention of fines for minor traffic offenses, while all of the other counties and all of the other municipalities in Missouri, there are 113 counties, they can keep up to 20%. Keep in mind, before SB 5 was passed, the limit was 30%. So the limit went from 30% to 20% for all of the other 113 counties and the municipalities there.
And
it went to 12.5% only for the municipalities in San Luis County.
And their burden is only to show a rational basis for that unless you show it's a special law. Is that correct?
If we show it's a special law under the three-part test, the burden shifts to the state under Jefferson County and DeSoto to show a justification. They put on no evidence of justification. That's at page 41 of the transcript. So if we satisfy the three-part Jefferson County test, the presumption is no longer a presumption. It's definitive.
So how is the range of 950,000 to infinity a narrow range?
Well, it's a narrow range because you look at the floor. The statute said a county with a charter form of government and at least 950,000 inhabitants. So if another county in Missouri is not a charter form of government and doesn't have 950,000 inhabitants, it can't be in the class. And the only county which came anywhere close to 950,000 was Jackson County with 675,000. And we show, taking just census figures for Jackson County and taking the most favorable growth rate for Jackson County based on those census figures, it would take at least 150 years for them to reach 950,000 inhabitants.
But that's really not the test for open-endedness, is it?
It is the test for the narrow. It's a test. Is this a class, a special class of one political subdivision? Yes, it is, because it's only the municipalities in St. Louis County.
But it's not the test doesn't include how long it might take, but just by the fact that it may occur.
Except that in DeSoto, this court said, when you look at this question of whether anybody else can enter the class, you said, you look at it as a practical matter. This is right out of DeSoto. As a practical matter, is it likely that someone else will enter in the foreseeable future the class? That's what you said in DeSoto. As a practical matter, is it likely that someone else will enter the class in the foreseeable future? Now, the foreseeable means such as may reasonably be anticipated. That's the dictionary definition for foreseeable. So there's no question that there is no other county in Missouri that is likely to enter into this class.
But there's not a single factor test in DeSoto or Jefferson County or anything else. That's one of the
things
you look at.
That's correct.
And so assuming that's true, nonetheless, I'm not aware of any case in which we've struck down a law as being a special law where it set a floor and not a ceiling. Why should this be the first case to do that?
Because when you look at the question about whether it's a narrow, is it so narrow? That's the third element. Is it so narrow that the only apparent reason for the narrow range is to treat these municipalities as special?
Right.
If you look at this class, there's no other county, no other municipalities can enter it. So it is clear as an open, it's open-ended, but it's clear because of the floor. Because of the floor that it is narrow. I mean, we all know that no other county and no other municipality is going to go into this class.
Well, it's not going to happen. That presumes a population growth rate based upon past numbers. St. Charles County has demonstrated that those numbers can change dramatically in the span of 10 to 20 years.
Yeah, that's not even at 675,000. The next closest county that has a charter form of government and inhabitants close to 950,000 is Jackson County at 675,000.
Depending on how we decide the other case, which is now pending before us, there's probably if the past is an indicator of the future, St. Louis County won't have 950,000 in 20 years. So how is it necessarily being singled out? I mean, you're looking about people going out and coming into that category.
No. We know that they singled out. I don't think there's any debate about whether they singled out the municipalities in St. Louis County. They clearly singled them out. That's why they set the bar at charter form of government and 950,000 inhabitants, because they were singling them out. There's no dispute they were singling them out. And there's no dispute that they were treating them differently from all of the other 113 counties and the municipalities they're in. They also put on these municipalities requirements that weren't on any of the other municipalities in the other counties. They require them to have police accreditation for their police force. Only them.
Can you address their argument that that's moot because the statute now has changed to not require that?
Well, they passed SB 572, and the answer to that, Your Honor, is that that doesn't say they didn't eliminate. They said if they have a police force or contracted one. We cite a statute in our brief, Missouri statute, which requires them to have a police force.
But each individual municipality does not have their own police department. Many do contract, so we just require them to contract with a certified police department, of which there are many, right?
There are many they can contract with, but if they don't contract, right, they may choose to have their own. Pagedale, for example, has its own police
force. But how does Hancock then apply?
Well, here's how Hancock applies, right? Hancock applies because when they imposed these burdens on these municipalities, they did not give them any funding.
But if they don't impose it on the community, but they allow them to contract it out or to have others do it, then it's their choice is the argument, and I want your response to that.
Right. Well, first of all, it's not just police accreditation. There are other obligations imposed. For example, just so the record's clear here, they impose requirement having CPA-determined annual audits. They have obligations to provide addenda on their traffic collections, which are now under oath and under penalty of perjury.
And do I understand your argument to be that now it's going to be a lot more work because you have to swear you really did what before you said you did?
Well, it costs something, Your Honor, and the question is whether it's more than de minimis. The standard this court has used in the past is whether the increased burden is more than de minimis. And we say for those municipalities which want to have their own police force, like Pagedale, they have to now get accreditation, and they have no money to do it. And we put on testimony in the court by an expert, by Mr. Wolf, accepted as an expert, we put on testimony that it costs thousands of dollars to have the police accreditation.
You also put on testimony that it's a process that could take 6 years.
That's correct.
How would that impact their ability to comply with it?
Well, the point about the 6 years, Your Honor, was that the state argued below that this matter was not right because a future legislature could provide the funding for these tasks that was not provided when SB 5 was passed. So we put on testimony to show that if you're going to start now to comply with the police accreditation requirement, which is now less than 5 years away, that it's going to take basically 6 years to do it. And the cost will be incurred now.
But again, that's only if you make a particular choice to get your own accreditation. Yeah. Hancock doesn't, there may be other problems with forcing you to pick somebody else's police force, but it's not a Hancock issue if you don't have to spend that money to do accreditation, is it?
It's not, but I think it's up to the city, Your Honor, to decide whether they want to have their own police force or not.
But Hancock's only addresses whether the state is forcing you to spend that money, not whether the law is good, whether it is fair or appropriate to put that choice on municipalities. That's not a Hancock issue. That may be a different issue.
Well, my opinion, Your Honor, I agree that if they contract with some of the, obviously they don't have to have accreditation. But we don't know what the costs are for contracting with someone else as opposed to having your own police force. And a city may
So you would agree there's nothing in the record that would demonstrate increased costs simply for contracting with an accredited force?
That's correct. But we also have in the record costs for other items which are still required and which were not funded. And we think that the city should have the right to have its own police force rather than contract out. And if it decides it wants to have its own police force, it obviously has no money for it.
And are you saying the legislature has no authority in the state? I'm not talking about the special laws issue. to decide whether cities of a certain size are not permitted to have a police force. That's not what they did here, but your argument is your argument that there's an inherent right of cities to have their own police force, or is that a matter of statute?
Well, the statute that we cited does give the choice mm-hmm. for a city to either have its own police force or contract out. So it does, the statute doesn't require the city to have its own police force. The statute does give the city the option, give the city the option of having its own police force or contracting out.
The state argues that there are many statutes on the book that have this type of class. They indicate, I missed the number, but it was more than a dozen, I think, that set a class at 950,000 and a charter form of government, and 33 that are more than a million in a charter form of government. Some of those actually have been challenged as special laws, and the court has upheld them. Is that correct?
Well, yes, Your Honor, but those are all before Jefferson County. We point out in our brief that this court established the Jefferson County test, and again, reaffirmed it in DeSoto, as the test for all future cases. In fact, you even made...
Actually, no. Jefferson County said there's a narrow exception, which it created in Jefferson County, for when it's okay to use population-based tests, but when we create an exception to that regular rule when the population is so narrow that it's clear you're targeting a particular city, or in that case, county.
Well, Your Honor, if I may...
It didn't say you can't use population-based
characteristics. No, you didn't say that, but you did say that the three-part test
yes.
was the test going forward, and that any case that previously had been decided on a different basis, not on the three-part Jefferson County test basis, but on a different basis, was no longer relevant, that for the future it was only going to be the Jefferson County three-part test. And you reaffirmed that this year in DeSoto.
So under the Jefferson County test, the second part is there's a similar political subdivision in size that's not included.
That's correct.
What's the subdivision that's the same that's not included?
All right. What it is the municipalities, all of the municipalities in the other 113 Missouri counties.
The state says you're using one political subdivision for paragraph one and a different one for paragraph two.
No. But
would you address that,
no,
please?
We say the political subdivision is the county of St. Louis and all of the municipalities in the county of St. Louis. That is the political subdivision, right? Therefore, the political subdivision that is not included is all of the other counties and the municipalities included in those.
Has any case ever looked at it in that way?
Well, we say DeSoto is such a case because in DeSoto you had criteria plus DeSoto.
Well, in DeSoto there was a very narrow range of population for the county. There was an even more narrow range of population for the city, like I think 1,000 individuals, and you had the geographic consideration.
Right. And here you have your geographic consideration, the county of St. Louis,
About the fire districts surrounding.
Right. And all of the municipalities there. And the contrast...
We don't have a geographic limitation here. You're saying that the other ones only identify a particular county, particular municipalities. We do not have a geographic one, such as it's on a border, or it's on a river,
that's
what Missouri means by geographic.
Right, but here the other subdivision is all of the cities which are third and fourth class cities, like the third and fourth class cities in St. Louis County. They're all the third and fourth class cities in the other 113 Missouri counties, and they're not included. They're not included. If I could, Your Honor, 1 minute on separation of powers, because we do have a cross appeal, and I'm certainly content to rely on our brief.
Go right ahead.
But I just want to address one thing about separation of powers. We believe that when SB 5 gave the director of the Department of Revenue the power to review all these addendums that are being submitted by all the municipalities about their traffic fines and determine whether those addendums were accurate. And looking at all the definitions for annual general operating revenue, all the other definitions that apply, determine whether they're accurate. And if the director of the Department of Revenue finds that they're not accurate, he then tells the municipality to cure it. If they don't cure it to his satisfaction or her satisfaction, he or she will then send a notice of noncompliance to the circuit court for that municipality, and the circuit court must, I emphasize, must, when they get the notice of noncompliance, take away the jurisdiction from the municipal court and give it give the municipal court jurisdiction to the circuit court. And we say that's not a ministerial act. That's giving the director of the Department of Revenue the power to take jurisdiction from the municipal court and give it to the circuit court, and only this court should be making that decision. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nothing like a case with only one issue, right? So there's a lot going on here. But just to respond briefly to a few points, I think Mr. Patinsky said the key words here. He said the city wants to have its own police force. Well, it can if it wants to, but it's not mandated by the state. Hancock bars the state from imposing a mandate that causes increased costs. If there's no mandate, there's no Hancock violation.
So you would agree that the state is mandating that they choose between having their own police force or contracting with another police force?
Not an SB 5.
Not an SB 5, but that's the underlying mandate. And now SB 5 is requiring an accredited force. If I'm understanding your argument, they still have the choice in the earlier law to contract. So it's their choice, not SB 5's mandate.
Right, the municipalities do reference another statute that requires cities of a certain class to have either a police force or to contract with it. That statute wasn't challenged in this case. The court requires constitutional challenges to be raised at the earliest possible opportunity, certainly not on appeal.
I want to ask you again about the special laws challenge. In DeSoto, the court clearly said, in talking about the Jefferson County factors, that the likelihood of all factors converging and another city coming within the scope sufficiently unlikely that, and then it does that quote which he relies on, that it's apparent that this is obviously dealing with this particular situation. In that case, there's actually a footnote right under that that talks about using this census data to figure out whether or not that's what really intended here. I mean, how do you respond to the fact that their argument is really keyed to or based directly on the DeSoto case? I mean, they're using the same type of analysis that this court did last year to determine whether or not there was a special laws violation.
I think the key difference is the number of affected parties. So just DeSoto was the only municipality in the state that law applied to. Here there are 90 that applies to. So at the very least, it's a much greater number. Really, at the end of the day, the legislature has for many years relied on open-ended population above a certain amount to legislate. There are 50 or more laws that have that kind of language. And if that violates the special law, we need to know that and so that they can, you know, change those laws. But the court has not, to date, ever said that. It's never said that an open-ended, infinite range above a certain amount is a narrow range. So this court would have to say it in this case to reach that.
I want to go back to the Hancock question one second. The cost of the CPA, is that an unfunded mandate?
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor, for a couple of reasons. One, both Normandy and Pagedale, the only two municipalities whose taxpayers brought the suit, put on evidence that they have for many years had a CPA do their reports to the state auditor, and the statute that requires, I think it's 105.045, that requires the annual financial report to the state auditor gives you a choice of whether you do it by CPA or without. There's a different window in the amount of time you have to turn it in, depending on which you use. And the both of these two cities have elected, at least for the previous 8 years, to go with the CPA. Now, there was evidence put on that the calculation that is required by SB 5 might cost $300 to $500 to calculate for the CPA.
It isn't the same calculation that's been done before. The calculation has changed.
The percentages are different, and the things that fall into the class are different, right? But 479.359.1 requires that calculation to be made anyway. They didn't challenge that portion of the statute. So that is good law, and the parties are currently under an obligation to do that calculation. The only thing that's in the part they've challenged is the requirement to email it separately to the auditor, which if that's not a de minimis cost, I don't know what is.
What is the case law for where we draw the line on what is a de minimis cost?
The court has not drawn that line. The closest that I'm aware of it came is in the Brooks case. That was a $35 charge for to the sheriff's office for getting a permit, and the court said that was more than de minimis. But below that, we don't have any case law on it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Case will be submitted.